You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three.
Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcito, a.k.a. Spaghetti Curdy. You. My name is NBA Injury Report on Twitter. And this is episode 358. Woo-wee, that's a lot of shows. God damn! On today's show, we're joined by Alex Wolf of Posting and Toasting. We're going to break down the Kevin Knox injury. I know it's a bummer. We're going to have some fun talking about it. That's what we do here on Locked On Knicks. We have fun even in the face of sure, sudden, irrevocable tragedy. Then we're going to talk about a bunch of stats. It's way too early to talk about stats, but it's fun to talk about stats. So we're going to sift through some stats and figure out if we think they're for real or fugazi or fugazi, however you want to say that. Are these stats going to continue? Is Burke going to keep shooting 33% on mid-range shots this year? Or will he improve that? You know? Is Alonzo Trier going to be tied with Lance Thomas for the lead in blocks at the end of the season at 0.7 per game? Or will someone else be? We're going to talk about all this stuff. It's going to be fun. But before we do that, I just want to remind you guys that we do voicemail bag sodes. Call us up, 929-377-5103. And if you have an interesting rant or comment or question, we will address it on a sode. All right, that's it. Let's start the show. Hit it, Mark.
Yes.
So, Alex, the Vivid Seats bummer of the week is that Kevin Knox, our prized rookie, is hurt. He sprained his ankle. We have an initial diagnosis of 2 to 4 weeks. He'll be reevaluated in 1 week. We're going to do this whole song and dance. First of all, of course it happened against the Celtics, right? Like, if I were to tell you Kevin Knox sprained his ankle last night, who do you think it was against? And you didn't know they were playing the Celtics, would you guess the Celtics?
I'll probably say the Celtics, yeah, or I would have assumed it was maybe the Bucks, just because that would have been like some weird serendipitous shit with the fact that Porzingis went down against them last year. But yeah, the Celtics would definitely be right up there.
And let us not forget the Celtics, just a house of horrors for the Knicks. I saw some number the other day, might have even been today. My sense of time is warped. It's just something you should know about me as the host of Locked On Knicks. Keeping moving. I saw this stat that the Celtics are like, they have a 700 win percentage in Madison Square Garden. Just like they destroy the Knicks always. Melo also stepped on a ref's foot in 2016 against Boston and hurt his ankle, which isn't as annoying as this, in my humble opinion. But it does bear repeating. Let us never forget that the Celtics are just like this haunted goon squad that's been harassing us for decades. Kevin Knox, though, you know, one of the bright spots of a season in which the Knicks figured to not win a lot of games. So how big of a bummer is this on a scale of 1 to, you know, Kristaps just tore his ACL and might never be the same for you, Alex?
I mean, given that it's just a sprain and he's young and he should rebound from it pretty well, I'm not going to put it anywhere near Kristaps tearing his ACL.
Nowhere near.
I mean, that's Kristaps tearing his ACL is legitimately devastating. Yes. Like that, like that's like nearly bring you to tears kind of stuff. Yeah.
You see years of fandom flash before your eyes. You know, first of all, yeah. Like shouts to him as the person. Yes, we're concerned for him, but we're fans here. And selfishly, you're like, oh shit, the Knicks are going to be terrible for 5 years, maybe. That kind of thing goes through your head. So that's truly horrifying. This is very different from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I haven't seen anything. Maybe I just missed it. I haven't seen anything reported as to like what grade level of sprain it is, right. But as someone with fragile ankles, who I think has, I think I've experienced every grade of them, based off what they were saying, it didn't sound like he had like a grade 3 sprain, which that can take like up to 2 months to heal. Oh. That's where you almost tear something.
I like this expert medical opinion from you. Unexpected.
This is like me with WebMD and a good understanding of my body, I guess, because I had what I diagnosed myself as a grade 3 sprain last year, and I'm not a professional athlete with like a professional training staff or anything, so it took me like a solid like 2 months, 3 months to come back from it.
And it's interesting, just, you know, as a meta commentary on this podcast, you know, I didn't even ask you for this medical knowledge, and you came ready for it. Whereas, you know, Drew the other day, I asked him to prepare some cap information, and he came just completely unprepared and didn't know the answer to the question. So it just really, it's an effort, you know, podcasting, it's much like professional basketball. Like, what you put into it is what you get out of it. And when you do the prep, you see the results on the court. That's what I want to say.
Well, and you know, sometimes, you know, like myself, you don't need to prepare, you know, it's just, you keep it all up in your noggin and, you know, you pull on it when you need it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Born ready. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean.
So.
I want to answer my own question. I'll land this plane. Don't worry about it. I'm going to say the Knicks are 9% less watchable with Kevin Knox out.
Yeah, I'll say like. I'll just one up you and say 10% because you know
pulling the prices right on me.
Screw you.
It's a bummer, but it's not that long, and there are a lot of other intriguing things happening. I find myself fascinated by Frankie or two and what's going on game to game, half to half. Alonzo Trier coming out of nowhere is almost making this like not an issue, just in terms of sheer surprise. And you know, what's interesting about a season like this, watching a team like this, is the things that you don't know are going to happen with the kids. And so someone like Trier, already showing so much more than you would have had any reason to expect, is so exciting that it kind of, if not completely balances out Knox going missing for a couple of weeks, comes pretty close. We still have Mitchell Robinson, who hasn't really gone on the court for more than like 9 minutes at a time. Maybe he'll go down to the G League soon. I don't know. But there's a lot going on still where there's plenty of things to watch night to night. You're not like, oh shit, now it's just the Jarrett Jack show, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what, like the thing that makes it just that 1% more less watchable to me is just the fact that like Knox struggled so bad in his first game, came out and played really well in his second game.
Yeah.
And then his third game, I mean, there wasn't much to draw on because he got injured pretty early on in his appearance, but he seemed like he was kind of operating more like the second game than the first game. So I hope that this doesn't have him come back and be tentative again and lose some of that spark that he clearly got from that second game. But I think he'll be okay, and the team will be super cautious with bringing him back because they don't want him to screw himself up further.
Yeah, it's much more frustrating as a fan to miss seeing him on the court than it will be for his overall development as a player. I mean, it moved back a couple weeks, you know, like that's...
Yeah, two weeks of his rookie season isn't going to kill him. That's what, like, well, or potentially 4 weeks.
Or a month. What's, yeah, even weeks? So, like, you know.
Yeah, 4 weeks. I mean, that's really not that bad. It'll be fine.
Yeah. To wrap up this topic, how much do you think this actually hurts the Knicks on the court? It's kind of a tough open-ended question here. We really don't know what he is yet, but what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be like a douche about it, but clearly they were doing all right the other night without him. So I don't know. It just kind of seems like right now the Knicks are just kind of firing. I mean, they're you know, they lost the second two games, but by a combined total of 4 points. So it's they're playing pretty damn good, and the bench unit's playing well. I mean, I honestly, and I don't mean this to say that Knox isn't a good player already, but I don't really think they're going to miss him too much. You know what I mean? They'll appreciate him coming back, but him being gone is not going to be like a huge drop off for the play on the court, I don't think.
I feel you. I think that he's someone who, at his best, and again, we're still learning what that could even possibly be, is going to bring some scoring, and they're really struggling to score on some level, especially in half court if they don't get stops and don't get out in transition. So like he could help you there, but he could hurt you. We've seen him be very inefficient too, and likewise we've seen him be a little bit more attentive to, let's say, help defense and team defense, like paying attention to those schemes and making, you know, the right switches and that kind of thing. But he's also let guys drive by him. So, like, his defense is a mixed bag, too. All in all, I could see it helping a little, hurting a little. But like you said, I don't think it's going to change the overall level too much. I want to now talk about some stats. It's way too early to talk about stats, but it's fun. So I want to talk about that. But before we do that, just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. In just a second, we're going to look at some early season stats and play a little game I like to call For Real or Fugazi. But before we do that, I got to talk about going to live events because it's so unbelievably important to me. I'll never forget the first time I went to see Billy Joel. You know, I was 8 years old. I snuck out of the house. I hitchhiked to Madison Square Garden. And when those first notes were hit on, you know, the Piano Man. You know that one. Piano Man, right? I'll never forget it. It was just so beautiful. I cried. I pinched my 8-year-old self. I was like, can you believe that you're here, James? At Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden. But I couldn't have got there without tickets. I happened to scalp those from a really scary guy who, I'll be honest, he tried to kill me. But I got the tickets, and I went in there. But if I were born later, if I were lucky to be born in this day and age, you know, sure, the world's on the verge of collapse, but we have apps. And one of those apps is Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is so great. You go in there, you find a seat for anything. A Billy Joel concert, a Knicks game, Hamilton, where you can hear just the best rap that's ever been rapped in the history of rap. And you can sit wherever you want. The seats are 100% guaranteed. There's no dealing with, you know, JoJo the Maniac outside who's going to try to kill your 8-year-old kid. You know what I mean? And the best part is, if you use code LOCKEDON, you get $20 off orders of $200 or more. So get Vivid Seats. It's an app. Use your Droid. Use your iPhone. Get Vivid Seats. Use the code LOCKEDON and get $20 off orders of $200 or more. Once again, that's Vivid Seats. So we're calling this segment the Way Too Soon Early Season Stats Jamboree. It's catchy. It'll catch on. And what we're doing here is we're going to list a bunch of stats. And then we're going to say whether we think these are legit, these trends are going to hold up, or they're not. And we're going to do that by saying they're either for real or fugazi. There's some, you know, there's some controversy over how to pronounce fugazi. We all know that Tim Thomas, once a Nick, always a Nick. Who was he beefing with? Kenyon Martin? I don't want to put you on the spot, Alex.
Yeah, it was. It was Kmart, because then it became that much like weirder when Kenyon Martin was a Nick.
Yeah.
And actually was a pretty good Nick for those couple of years.
When Kenyon Martin came over with his lipstick tattoo Kmart. On his
I don't remember the details.
I don't know. Yeah, they fought, and then Tim Thomas called him Fugazi. He's like, he's a Fugazi, which is, you know, a fake tough guy, a phony, however you want to say it. So, are these stats for real, or are they fugazi? I'm going to say fugazi now. I like that better. I've decided.
I like it better, too. It's got a little more oomph to it than fugazi.
Right?
Fugazi sounds passive. Fugazi sounds,
fugazi.
You know,
you
could aggressive.
You could be angry when you say it. Fugazi.
Well, you know what? Maybe if I'm feeling really, really strongly about it, I'll say fugazi. And then if I'm not, then I'll say fugazi. You know?
Fugazi just sounds a little too delicious. I think so.
So for the listeners here, before we got on the air here, I decided to, we were trying to figure out how to pronounce this, like what the for real pronunciation is. Mm-hmm. And I looked it up on Urban Dictionary, and they have an audio cue that you can click to play it for you. And it just goes, Fugazi. And I didn't know what to make of that. So I don't know if we should say it that way, too, with the Italian accent.
We're going to have some fun with this. Let's start. Let's just see how it goes. Trey Burke is shooting 33% on mid-range shots this year after shooting an elite 50% on mid-range shots last season when he came up from the G League to the big league club. So is Trey Burke shooting 33% on mid-range shots this year for real or fugazi? What do you think, Alex?
What do Is there a middle ground?
Yeah.
Because I feel like the real answer is going to fall somewhere between 33% and 50%, yeah. Maybe in like the 40 to 42% range. That would be my best guess.
I think
so. I guess we'll say it's Fugazi, because I don't think it's going to be for real. I don't think he's going to shoot that low for the whole year.
That's technically correct, given the parameters I gave you with which to answer this question. I think a more precise way to put it would be the regression is for real. We thought all along. There was a slim, slim chance that he was just this elite mid-range shooter. But the smart money was on him regressing seriously. And I think that regression is for real. I think 33% is Fugazi. I don't know which one I'm doing anymore. I'm doing Fugazi like it's delicious and Fugazi like I'm angry. I'm switching it all up. But Hardaway, let's talk.
Yeah, I had the opposite effect. I think Fugazi is the angry one. Fugazi.
It is, and I agreed with you to start the segment, but then when I was saying them just now, I mixed it up. I'm all screwed up.
That's okay.
Can you help me get through this segment? Will you be a rock that I can lean on?
I'll help you. Okay. I'll be your rock.
Thank you. Hardaway Jr. is shooting 39.3% on 9.3 three-point attempts per game. That's a fantastic number on fantastic volume. Is this for real or Fugazi?
I want to say for real so badly, but I'm a man of, you know, usually trusting history, and I'm going to say Fugazi. I want to say for real really badly. I'm hoping that it's Fugazi only in the sense that it's only maybe like 2 points higher than what he settles in for the season. Because if he could start being like a 37% three-point shooter, that would be great.
That would be great.
Especially given that he's, you know, still going to be a focal point for probably at least half the season. So I would like to say for real, but I'm going to say a light Fugazi.
I'm just looking up his career three-point percentages real quick because they're not great. But they're kind of all over the place. Friend of the Sodes, Ashwin Ramnath, he's been following Tim Hardaway since back in the day in Michigan. He's a Michigan fan. He's come on the show and said, like, even back then, he'd have one good season, one bad season. In the pros, he shot 36%, 34%, 39%, 36%. Last year, he shot 31%. We all know what happened there. Right now, he's shooting 39%. So, I think, you know, if he can keep shooting 40% on almost 10 attempts per game, they have a hell of a player on their hands, and they are going to be very glad that they signed Tim Hardaway Jr. to that contract. I don't think he's going to quite keep it up, but shooting is one of those things that does legitimately get better, like, much later than other skills for players. Like, we've seen, you know, the most obvious one for Knicks fans, we all know that Jason Kidd became a good three-point shooter before he couldn't shoot one ever again for the rest of his life. But he became a good three-point shooter like very late in his career. This kind of thing does happen. Tim Hardaway Jr. is still pretty young to be able to improve that. So I'm buying some of this. I'm going to say like mostly. I'm 80% for real, 20% Fugazi. Frank Ntilikina?
That's fair.
Yeah, is that fair?
That's fair.
Yeah, okay. Frank Ntilikina, at the opposite end of the spectrum, shooting 27.3% from downtown on 3.7 attempts per game. Is this putrid showing for real or Fugazi?
I feel like this is all that I'm saying for all these. Like they've all been Fugazi, but I think that's the case here too. Again, I really hope that's the case here. I don't want him to be a 27% three-point shooter. I think he's going to get back to at least what he shot last year, which was 32%.
Yeah.
But I think once he starts, like, if they're really going to be putting him in this off-ball role for the season and they want to stick with that, I really hope that he kind of figures it out and can settle in on a better percentage, maybe get more comfortable with those spot up opportunities and things of that nature, and start shooting a better percentage as the season goes on. But I mean, if I recall last year too, he kind of started off a little slow shooting. I think he's just got to warm up a little, but like I said, I think he should at least get back to what he got to last year, hopefully gets more like 35% or something like that. But all in all, the 27% absolute Fugazi.
Yeah, that's a very angry Fugazi from me, because no one shoots that poorly. That's just like unheard of. And like you said, he's going to improve from his rookie year. I believe in that. His shot doesn't look all janky. It doesn't look busted. Doesn't look broken. That can only last for so long until you're like, well, sure, it looks nice, but it's not consistent. But I don't know. It's just way too early. I don't even want to spend any more time talking about this, because it's ridiculous to think that he's going to finish shooting less than 30% from beyond the arc. Not going to happen. Kevin Knox shooting 44.4% on three-point attempts per game. I probably didn't need a third one in here about three-point shooting, but here we are. I've said it out loud, so now we've got to go with it. Is this for real or Fugazi?
That is going to be an unfortunate Fugazi.
It's 9 3-point shots. He's made 3 of 9 3-point shots.
Yeah, so he's on a 1 of 3 pace, or 1.3 out of 3 per game pace at the moment. So I don't think that's going to last. I think he's going to struggle. And I think that realistically Knox could settle in almost 10 points less than that, like almost 10 percentage points less than that as the season goes on. Mm-hmm. Just because you could see in his form sometimes that he's going to run it, like he has good form, but you could see with the way he shoots the ball sometimes, as Clyde says, he aims the ball a lot.
Yeah.
Right now, at least while he's still trying to figure out everything. As long as he's shooting like that on a consistent basis, he's gonna have his off nights. He's gonna have his on nights, but I think the off nights are probably gonna outnumber the on nights, and it's gonna wind up once he gets back from injury and plays a few more games. He's probably gonna settle in around like 34-35% if we're lucky.
Yeah, I could see that. By the way, I don't have time to like look it up, but I heard myself. I definitely, whatever stat I have written down is wrong. 3 of 9 would be 33.3%, and he's shooting 44.4%. So discard that. I'm not an idiot. I can do basic math. I'm glad I catch like one of those afterwards per show, and it drives me insane. So I'm glad that I at least caught this one in real time. We've got two more for real or Fugazis to go. Alonzo Trier is tied with Lance Thomas for the lead in blocked shots per game at 0.7 per game. Forgetting Kristaps Porzingis coming back, because he'll obviously, you know, average like 2-3 blocks a game. Is this for real or Fugazi?
So what aspect of it are we grading here? Is it that they're... are they going to be the two leaders in blocked shots? Or is it like, is Trier going to pace Lance Thomas the rest of the year?
I think it's maybe, it's both. Is the Knicks interior defense so poor without Porzingis that someone like an Alonzo Trier or a Lance Thomas could lead the Knicks in blocks per game? At the same time, it also includes Alonzo Trier is developing this reputation. Fizdale said that he had 6 chased out blocks in like summer league and their practices combined, which was hilarious to me because that doesn't really count for much. But then the season started and he seems to have some hops. He had 1 chase down block that was legit, that was called off erroneously by the refs. So are we seeing another skill of Trier's that we didn't realize was there pre-draft, or is that Fugazi? And then is their interior defense so bad that these guys could potentially lead the team without Kristaps and blocks?
Okay, so I'll answer that in reverse. First off, could the Knicks interior D be that bad that these guys could lead the team in blocks? I think the answer is unfortunately yes.
I think I'm with you.
Just because Enes Kanter isn't a shot blocker, never has been, never will be. And Noah Vonleh, from what it seems like, plays kind of a similar game to Kanter in a way. Mm-hmm. And seems pretty, I mean, he's big and he fills the lane well and stuff, and he seems to be a pretty good defender, but he does not seem like a rim protecting shot blocker type guy.
Yeah, I concur. So strong
then,
concur.
Then you start looking through the rest of the roster and you're like, I don't know who else you could reasonably expect to block a bunch
Frank?
Of shots.
It could be a Frank. Frank could sneak in there.
Frank does, but Frank also, like, I feel like with Frank you're gonna run into 50-50 between, like, will he block guys or will he just, like, strip them on their way to the hoop? Like,
true.
Is it, or will he foul them? I mean, because he's been doing that a decent amount as well.
Hey.
It's kind of more up in the air with Frank, I think. I think there's a real shot that these guys could potentially be near the lead by the end of the season, which is sad to say.
You feeling for
but, me? And then in regards to if I think Trier secretly is a good shot blocker, maybe.
Like this Dwayne Wade-esque, like, I mean, you know, like every once in a while you see a guard.
Yeah, that's who I was about to invoke. I was about to say Dwayne Wade, like... Maybe he's got those skills, you know what I mean? I don't know if he doesn't really have that sort of elite wingspan that Wade had for a guard. But I think maybe. I mean, he's definitely like a super good athlete. So I don't know if he'll necessarily hold at 0.7 per game, but he might get like a block every other game, averaging at like a half a block a game kind of thing.
I think it's going to be one of those fun things. You're like, oh shit, a Trier block. You know, it's not going to be one of those things that like wins you a games all the time. Like, he's not gonna, you know, severely alter the course of a game with his elite rim protection, but it's gonna happen more frequently than a lot of guards, and I think be fun. That's where I come down on that.
Well, pretty much everything that he does is fun, because it seems like every time
this kid,
like every time that he does anything, he gets so fired up about it and just whatever. Like, I don't know, I kind of want to like follow him around in his everyday life and see if he gets as fired up by like normal things as he does by like every cool thing.
I only know this from GIFs because I'm not a child and don't watch these sort of shows, but he looks like a Dragon Ball Z character that's like exploding with fire or whatever their shit is when they come out of their Pokeballs. When the Dragon Ball Z players are let out of their Pokeballs. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, the fact that you're like exposing yourself to know how Pokeballs work is very telling of
your not Dragon
Ball Z, you know, hatred of all this. No, your fake hatred of like all things cartoons and stuff.
Wouldn't it be funny if I was like a real Republican senator with it, and it turns out I'm just obsessed with all this shit, and I'm trying to deflect, and I'm like, we must outlaw comic books.
Yeah, I could totally see it. To be honest, I could see you absolutely being like a closet like anime nerd. Or something, and you just
that'd be such a good reveal.
You make fun of Drew just to like, you know, keep up your appearances, but you know, then you like turn on My Hero Academia
because my Italian American family just made fun of me growing up. They were like, "You fucking nerd."
Yeah, exactly. but yes, Alonzo Trier does look like he's going Super Saiyan, James. That's called going Super Saiyan.
Oh, is that what it's called?
They channel all their power and turn into a supreme being.
Yeah, his hair is like very like super Sam. What do you call it?
Super Saiyan.
I'm Super Saiyan. Let's move on. We got one final way too early season stat that we're gonna say if it's for real or fugazi. Here are the top five Knicks in plus minus. Noah Vonleh plus 10. Trey Burke plus 7. Dotson plus 7. Tim plus 4.7 and Trier plus 4. And then at the very bottom, we've got Frank at minus 6.0. Does this stat... How for real is this stat? How fugazi is this stat right now? Is it reflecting everything that's going on the court? Is it sometimes reflecting what's going on in the court? Somewhere in between? Who knows? What do you think, Alex?
I'm actually... And I mean, this. Don't take this as a knock on Frank, but this stat is for real. Right now, it is. I think it is reflective of what's been going on in the court, but it's not really Frank's fault that his personal number is so bad. I think what's happening here is A, Frank's playing the most minutes on the team, or close to it, and B, like, he's usually one of the first guys to get subbed out, and the Knicks have just been getting destroyed for the first like 5 minutes of every game, so they've been getting into these, you know. Whatever it was, they got into like a 10-point hole against Atlanta in the first game. They got down, I know, like 16 versus the Celtics the other day. I forget what the biggest deficit was against the Nets. But that's unfortunately reflecting on Frank. Then he's the first sub, and then he comes back in with the starters later. So he's been part of some of the runs, but he's also been part of all those horrible, horrific openings to the games, which I think has really deflated his number.
Yeah, and I mean, he's also spent most of his time with that Ennis and Trey Burke pairing on defense, which has been like really disastrous in the pick and roll.
And And with Lance Thomas on offense.
With Lance Thomas terrible. On offense. And I think Vonleh's done a lot better job than Cantor has in his minutes against, you know, what competition he's seeing. Maybe that factors into it. But he's had a lot more success on the court. He is leading the team at plus 10, and Frank hasn't spent a lot of time with him on the court. So, you know, are there things like, if Frank could score the ball a lot better, would that number be better? Like, yeah. But it's still less than it should be because of the circumstances that are outside of his control, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wouldn't say, for example, that Dotson, in the minutes that he's played so far, or even Burke, for that matter, I wouldn't say that either of them has contributed far more than Frank that would, like, justify that almost 10-point plus-minus swing between them. Or actually, it's a more than 10-point swing. It's a...
Yeah,
seven.
It's 13 points away. If Frank has this plus minus 3 months from now, you know, I'll admit, all right, maybe there's something going on here that is more reflective of like what Frank is doing or not doing. But right now, to me, this is one of those extreme early season things, extreme small sample size things that doesn't. I mean, he's a better player than he was last year. I think that's pretty undeniable. I don't know if it's by leaps and bounds, but he looks improved to you, right?
Frank? Yeah. Oh, or no. Doubt.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So like,
yeah, I've definitely seen improvement, like physically way improved, confidence wise, way improved. I think, defensively at least as good, I'd say. So yeah, I mean, I think
his plus minus was way better than that. It was like pretty decent. So, you know, this is something that, you know, it's for real in terms of reflecting what's going on when they're out there on the court. But Fugazi, if you're trying to figure out, you know, is Frank a good player by this? Is Vonleh the best player on the team? Like, both of those things are no. But the success that they have found while they're on the court is real. And you can't... I mean, I guess that's always real with plus minus, right? Like, that is what it is. It's when you're out there, that's what's happening. But there is so much going on outside of just your presence, it being a team game with 10 guys total, that you can't draw every conclusion. It's just a good tool for the toolkit to help, you know, fill in some blanks.
Don't tell that to the Knicks post-game guys. They freaking love plus-minus, Han and Zerbiak.
It's also funny. It's like the one thing that Clyde mentions that was invented since 1948. He's like, he's always talking about plus-minus. I'm woke with the stats, kids.
But you know what? You know what though, Clyde. Like, Clyde gives so much more insight other than that that I don't even mind. Plus, Clyde can do whatever the hell he wants.
Oh, of course.
I freaking love that guy, man.
I'm not saying. Listen, this is part of his charm. I mean, he's exceedingly charming, and one of those things is that he knows like two advanced stats, and one of them is plus minus,
quote unquote advanced stats.
I mean, yes, you know. I mean, that's exactly right. And it is about exactly 30 minutes. And that's going to do it for us for today's episode of Locked On Knicks. So, Alex, I want to thank you so much for joining us. You might just be doing it to pad your lead in the standings. I don't know, but I did appreciate what you brought to the table. You brought way more to the table than you took off tonight. And that's all you can ask of a podcast.
Dude, I'm not just padding stats over here. I love you, man. I love coming on here. Locked On Knicks, this is like my second home, you know what I'm saying?
The feeling is mutual.
Knicks blog, and then we got Locked On Knicks.
Yeah. I mean, the feeling's mutual, and I do know what you're saying. But you know, you gotta, this is my Phil Jackson school of confusing love, right? It's like put people through weird tests. Clarence Gaines, put on this Ninja Turtles outfit and go interview Alex, see what he does. Alex, where can the people find you online, and is there anything you want to plug other than just posting and toasting, which is of course wonderful,
the number one Knicks blog on the planet? Find me on posting and toasting, find me on Twitter at the Alex Wolf, WOLFE. And I'll take a moment to plug something else that you can't come to, which gives me sad faces. So we're doing a meetup a week from Friday, November 2nd. It's going to be at 8:30 p.m. It's a primetime game. And it's going to be at Slattery's Midtown Pub to see the Knicks play the Mavericks.
Ooh.
Ooh. So that should be pretty cool. That address for that, for anybody interested, is 8 East 36th Street. God, that was more of a tongue twister than I wanted it to be.
Yeah, you screwed it up.
I did. 8 East 36th Street. It's a few blocks away from MSG. They're giving us like a whole floor to watch the Knicks that night. So that's pretty dope. And 10% of all drink sales at the bar are going to go towards Garden of Dreams.
Nice.
And they're giving us some stuff to raffle, which is also exciting.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
So, sorry you can't come, you know?
Yeah.
Because you just had to go to a wedding or
Alex
whatever.
Was like, are you going anywhere anytime soon? And I was like, yeah, actually, I got this wedding in Mexico that I have to go to this week. And he was like, oh, okay. I was like, why'd you ask? He's like, no reason. And then the next day, I saw on Twitter that he had scheduled this get-together for right in the middle of the week. I couldn't be there. So, you know, you guys draw your own conclusions.
What you don't know is that...
Sorry, couldn't let you hear that. That's extremely classified information that Alex just put out there. And you're just going to have to live with that mystery. I don't like to end a show that way, but it is what it is. I do want to thank you so much for listening to Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks for general camaraderie and bonus takes. Follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report for jokes about basketball. Be chill to each other. Easier said than done, but try to do it if you can. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Only salt the pasta water. Take that. For data, bees better than Pac. Peace.